Good morning. This is Lisa Loving, and I'm speaking with Jacqueline Winspear. She's a mystery writer, and her newest Maisie Dobbs novel is called Pardonable Lies. Jacqueline, thanks for coming to KABU with us.
And thank you. It's lovely to be here.
So Pardonable Lies, the Maisie Dobbs books are interesting to me because here at KABU, what we often are talking about are issues of war mm-hmm. and power mm-hmm. and global conflict. And your books, even though they're sort of, well, they're mysteries, they're not exactly cozies. I'd like to talk a little bit about that later, but you use this character who is a very simpatico, it's a very embraceable format to talk about some of the most horrific things that happen in a person's lifetime. I mean, am I imagining that?
No, you're not imagining that. You're absolutely not. The Great War was a terrible, terrible conflict. Millions and millions of people killed worldwide throughout that time, and it's a time that for me is it's very rich in just being able to explore issues of what happens to ordinary people in extraordinary times.
And we are talking about World War One.
That's right, the Great War,
which is so fascinating for me to hear you say that, because here, as a native of the United States, I know that I speak for a lot of people when I say I worry that my government and my country has started more than its share of great big wars. Mm-hmm. It's a worry. And as I read through one of your earlier novels and reading through Pardonable Lies, some of these issues are universal.
Oh, they're absolutely, absolutely universal. When you're talking about a conflict, it doesn't matter whether it was the Napoleonic Wars or going back to the Peloponnesian Wars, you know. It sounds like mythology nowadays. There are universal truths about what happens in a time of war and how people are affected and how one war will lead to the next. In fact, it's actually on, I've got an essay on my website about a tour that I did, or pilgrimage is how I'd prefer to refer to it, to the World War One battlefields of the Somme and Ypres. And it was actually, I think it was at Vimy, which is the huge Canadian memorial to the missing, which is an amazing, amazing structure. But in the, they've got a little visitor center, and there is a quote from a Canadian serviceman, and I can't remember it exactly what it said. You know, I can only paraphrase it, and it was about the futility of war, that one war will lead to the next. And in fact, today much of what we're seeing in Iraq is due to, you know, some of the events that led up to it, if we look at history, are due to the way that that region was handled, let's say, after the First World War, and divided by people that did not come from that region. So, yes, there are universal truths.
Some few years ago, I was driving on my first road trip through, I want to say it was Holland, France, Germany, and Belgium. Mm. And I remember we're driving in this old funky van, and it was a beautiful summer, lovely rolling hills. It was just lovely. And I looked up and saw the sign that said, you know, the Somme. Next left or something like that. And I just remember thinking, wait a minute, that's the Battle of the Somme. That mm-hmm. must be the place. It was a hellhole. It was a hellhole. And yet as we drove that day, it was beautiful and green. It was like birds were singing. I want to ask you, first off, how did you come to this as the location, the oeuvre, for your writing of these I'm just going to say the Maisie Dobbs novels are charming. Mm-hmm. They're charming mystery novels, you know, that are, you want to curl up in front of a fire and read them. And yet there's a kernel there, there's more than a kernel there, mm-hmm. that is really horrific. So how did you even get on this track?
There are two answers to that question, to tell you the truth. Before writing Maisie Dobbs, I was purely a nonfiction writer. I wrote on issues of international education, and still do, and also one of my favorite genres is the personal essay. And I had not written any fiction since I was a child. However, the first answer is that Maisie Dobbs just came to me in what I've referred to since as my moment of artistic grace. I mean, literally, it was one of those moments when it was like watching a movie in your head. the first chapter was unfolding. Trouble was, it was unfolding while I was in very busy traffic. But that moment's artistic grace, I do not think they happen in a vacuum. I have always been really curious about the history of the Great War, and more broadly, between that time, between the start of the Great War to the end of the Second World War. It was, going back to my earlier comment, an extraordinary time, and I'm interested in what happens to ordinary people in extraordinary times. But there's also a personal element to this, that my curiosity about that war goes back to my childhood. And obviously, you know, I'm framing it now as an adult, but then it's just a child trying to understand. My grandfather was severely wounded during the Battle of the Somme in July 1916. He was shell-shocked. This followed also being involved in the Battle of Ypres, the First Battle of Ypres, and he had been a stretcher-bearer, as well as being in the engineers. He was a sapper. But I remember asking about him when I was about 5 years old. And just to tell you the little story here, when I was a young child, my parents moved into the kind of house that a lot of young couples moved into or move into in need of some modernization. You can imagine it. Big old Victorian house. I mean, literally did not have an indoor bathroom or anything like that. And they thought, we're going to do something with this. And they were still trying to do something with it 25 years later. But anyway, my grandparents came to stay. And it was very early on. We hadn't been there very long. And in the kitchen, which was a big scullery-type kitchen, there was a solid fuel stove. And that's where the water had to be put on to heat overnight, so we had hot water in the morning for baths and what have you. And I came down really, really early one morning because I'd heard my grandfather get up before anybody else. And when I came downstairs, I was watching him through the banister rail. You know, we had a staircase that went down into the kitchen. And I saw him literally as he rolled up his trouser leg, and he had a big bowl of hot water, and he began to bathe his legs. And I thought, you know, as a child would, curious, you know. And then my father came downstairs, and I can remember as he walked past, he gave me a hug, kissed me good morning, and then I watched as he went up to his own father and put his arm round him and held him and said, "Are you all right, Dad?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, I'm all right, son." And later on I said, you know, I asked my mum, "Well, what's wrong with Granddad?" Because I adored him. And she explained to me, as best you can as a child, that my grandfather was still, he was very wounded in this battle, and that he was removing shrapnel splinters from his legs. And he was still removing shrapnel from his legs when he died at 77. And obviously what had happened, you know, battlefield medicine being what it was, they did the best they could. You know, he came in with these terribly wounded, terrible leg wounds. They cleaned them out, sewed him back up again, got him back to Britain as soon as he could. He copped what they call a blighty, which is an injury that got you back to Britain. But, you know, that you can't get out all the shrapnel. It's there, and it was still coming out of his legs, you know, years and years and years later, decades later. And in a way, as I look back on it, that's almost like a metaphor for what happens in war. The splinters are still coming out years later. And that's where the curiosity started. And then obviously when I was a teenager, you know, when I was in school, we studied the war poets, Wilfred Owen, Siegfried Sassoon, Edmund Blunden. And I was just completely touched. And I became very interested, had a layperson's historical interest in the whole era, in what happened to society then, what happened, I go back again, to ordinary people, and coming to Maisie Dobbs, what happened to the women.
If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa, and we're speaking with Jacqueline Winspear. Her newest book is called Pardonable Lies. It's a Maisie Dobbs novel. Is it the third?
It's the third.
Third,
yes.
In a series of, they're murder mysteries, and since you brought this up about how you watched your grandfather basically dealing with
the past, mm-hmm. you know, even up to the day that he died. I think that a theme in this book is that by this time, okay, Maisie Dobbs started out as a war nurse.
That was her first sort of real job, right. So to speak. She's a battlefield nurse.
But now, by the time this book comes around, she's taken a retroactive page, I should say, from some modern novels about murder mysteries, and she's become a private investigator.
She is, she's a psychologist and investigator.
Psychologist and investigator, and yet I think that one of the things that keeps coming up for her is how to do your job without letting the past take over.
That's right.
Am I imagining that?
No.
Straight from your grandfather's story, huh?
That's really where my curiosity started. And, you know, it's really interesting. When I went to the battlefields of the Somme and Ypres, and particularly to the Somme, and I walked on that ground there, and I reached down, literally put my hand into the ground, pulled out a fistful of, I mean, in one fist there were two bullets, live bullets, still from a battle that happened, you know, next year, 90 years ago, shrapnel balls and so on. People, I mean, the farmers still turn over shells, and there are places by the side of the road which are designated collection points, and every week or every couple of weeks the authorities come round, they collect the ordnance and they take it away for controlled explosions and what have you. And that, there's something to me that's really interesting about that, when you're still digging up the remains of war 90 years on. And to walk on that land and see, then look up what was no man's land and see the battlefield cemeteries, you know, with the cross of sacrifice, and they come right down through the Somme Valley. And to think that hundreds of thousands of men died for, in some cases, just a few feet, just a few feet. And it's a pilgrimage for me on one level because of my grandfather and indeed my grandmother, because my grandmother was a munitions worker in World War I, 19 years old, working with very volatile explosives, and she was partially blinded in an explosion at a munitions factory. But it was a real pilgrimage, and there was one thing that I came away with. And that was the thought that we really have some explaining to do to these men. It's almost the explaining to do. If I can actually quote someone, last year one of the oldest remaining alive veterans died. He was 106 or something like that, and it was around about the time when the Iraq War started, and he was asked for his opinion. And he said, well, I don't know. I mean, literally put it like that. He said, we thought we were going to be stopping all that sort of thing. And it's, I know it's food for thought is all I would say, food for thought. But one thing I did want to do in the novel was also to, and in the character of Maisie Dobbs, was to reflect something of the spirit of that generation of women, which is a real interest of mine, you know.
If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Jacqueline Winspear, and her newest novel, it's a mystery novel, it's called Pardonable Lies. And, you know, I just keep asking you these questions about the war, because this is a cozy novel. I mean, I would
in some ways, it's in fact, someone said they thought I'd reinvented the cozy, because it adheres to some of the sort of the basics of a cozy, in that, you know, there's no gratuitous sex or violence, but on the other hand, you don't need that to make it horrifying, because you're dealing with war. But on the other hand, it does address issues of those who are left behind. As one of the characters in Birds of a Feather, my second novel, said, that's the trouble with war. It's never over when it's over. It lives on inside the living.
This is what I want to ask you, and of course I want to talk about Maisie and mm-hmm. more about the novel, but I'm stuck, maybe because of current events, I'm stuck with this issue of World War I, why it's important, and having been through that area, and it's just, it's different than driving through what we see as war zones in the United States, Civil mm-hmm. War areas, and even Native American war areas in the United States. This is what I want to put to you. we can talk about the Great War.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think in Europe and around the world, people have more connection, though, to World War II, possibly, for a variety of reasons. And yet, World War I really was... It was unique in so many ways. Battle of the Somme, didn't 500,000 people die there? How many people died there?
It's 1 million.
Was it 1 million?
It's over
this
a million, in fact.
This is the first time that in one battle, in one foxhole trench battle, we could take out practically a whole nation's worth of people in one fell swoop.
Well, in fact, that's exactly what happened with one example. Because, in fact, the Battle of the Somme was actually a series of battles. It started in July and ended in November. But on the first day, in the first hours of the Somme, hundreds of thousands of men died. If we take, for example, there's an area called Newfoundland Park, which is where the... It's an area of the Somme Valley where the Canadian and Scottish divisions... went over the top. And those Canadian divisions were a huge number of men from Newfoundland. After the war, the Canadian government bought that land from France, essentially. It's about an 80-acre area. And they threw up a fence around it, and that became Newfoundland Park. There are parts of it that are completely cordoned off because there's so much live ordnance there that you cannot go near there. But they didn't try to preserve it especially. One of the things they did was to bring in native plants to Newfoundland, and there's a giant caribou there, a caribou sort of statue in remembrance of those men. But the truth is that I stood there. I went there very, very early in the morning when the mist was just rising off the land.
It's a beautiful, peaceful area today.
Green and peaceful area. Now, imagine this. I mean, you can still see the remains of the trenches, and there are areas where you can see where the shell holes are. But you can imagine in the first hours of the Battle of the Somme, the front line was full of the dead and dying. The people in the second lines couldn't get to the first line because it was choked with people dying, with men dying. And 20,000 men in just the first few hours. Here's the thing. It actually changed the politics. Now, I'm not great on dates and numbers in many regards. I'm very interested in the social effects, so to speak. But one of the effects was that following that war, Newfoundland could not exist as a separate colony anymore. Before that, it was considered to be a colony of the British Empire. It could not exist in that way because so many of the population had died. So it had to basically either become part of the British Isles or part of Canada, the Dominion of Canada, and became part of the Dominion of Canada. So the political map was changed forever. And in fact, one of the things is, in Europe, very much the First World War has never, ever gone from the public memory, so to speak. In fact, if you went to Britain if you were in Britain on November the 11th at 11 o'clock, you could be in Safeway and the tills would stop. You could be on the street and the traffic would pull over because there is still the 2 minute silence, which was actually something that was instituted by George V. When he said that all locomotion should cease, you know, so that the dead could be remembered. And that still happens today. People wear their poppies. And it's not just the dead of that war, but of all wars. And there's this great sense of, lest we forget, and you'll find it in Canada, Australia, South Africa, all the countries of what we considered to be the Commonwealth, you know. People are very mindful. Very mindful of the dead of war.
We are speaking with Jacqueline Winspear, and her newest Maisie Dobbs mystery novel is called Pardonable Lies. I don't want to spend so much time talking about it, but I feel like this is the gigantic backstory to this story. It's not just a novel, you know. I'm skimming through here. It's not just a novel, and I feel as though it's something more than that. And anyway, and it's an excellently written series. It's fun. This is what you're going to, on Thanksgiving, when you have time off, you're going to have your super special treat, and you're going to cuddle up in a chair with the Maisie Dobbs novel. And it's more than just a mystery novel. And so before we go any farther, though, I wanted to toss out to you, I think it is a little bit unique to have a sleuth. She's a gumshoe at this point, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And she wears a tidy little hat. And she, but she's not just a private detective. She's a psychologist.
Psychologist, yes.
Why? Where'd you get that? Why?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because so many people think, well, Maisie's a very modern woman, but she's very much a woman of her time in many regards. You know, in the early part of the last century, modern psychotherapy as we know it today was in its infancy. I mean, I don't know this exactly, but I think Jung wrote his doctoral thesis in about 1904, something like that. So the idea of being a psychologist was in its infancy then, and of course she is mentored by someone who is, one of his many things, is that he is a psychologist. And she studied the moral sciences and then became a psychologist after the war and studied in this area with her mentor. So she's very much a woman of her time, and particularly in her independence and her spirit. You know, it's an interesting thing. You know, people have often asked me about this. And in fact, a bookseller said to me the other day, she said, when I first read Maisie Dobbs, she said, I thought, oh, you know, a woman wouldn't be able to do those things in that time. She said, and she went off to do her own research and found, oh my goodness me, it's bang on the money. We often think of the first generation of women in modern times to have gone to war as being the Rosie the Riveter generation.
Yeah, World War II era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whereas before that, there was the women, particularly in Europe, not so much in America, because America was not in World War I for as long a period of time. But particularly in Europe, women went to war in their hundreds of thousands. If we take Britain alone, 60,000 women went directly into war work, which meant they were munitions workers, like my grandmother. They were ambulance drivers, nurses, code breakers, and they worked in military support roles. In addition, about another 460,000-odd went into what was considered man's work to release men to the battlefield. There was not a field of endeavor left untouched by a woman's hand. They worked on everything from working the land, they worked in construction, they built ships, they built aircraft, they brewed beer, they delivered the beer, they fought fires, the first women went on the beat as police auxiliaries. They were an extraordinary generation of young women. But it was a generation for whom everything changed. Because in 1921, this is what this census of 1921 revealed, and it's interesting because it's kind of similar to what happened just recently, revealed that there were 2 million, what they referred to then as surplus women of marriageable age, because not only was there, you know, something of a discrepancy anyway, even before the Second World War, but in the Second World War, in the First World War, something like 750,000 men from Britain were killed. Another 1.35 million came home severely wounded, and probably about 60,000 very severely shell-shocked. So that left a generation of women with no partner. They were a generation of women, therefore, who had to take care of their own financial security for the rest of their lives. They had to nurture relationships. They had to build community. Obviously, there were those who floundered. But there were those who moved into civic life. Many became teachers. It was the great age of the, you know, between the wars, the British woman novelist. Women really moved into, they really came into their own. Of course, the press had a field day with that. You know, my goodness me, all these women running around with the, you know, calming hand of a man on them, what are we going to do? But, of course, when I was a little girl, that generation of women were getting on in years. They were senior citizens by then. And here's what I remember about them, because there were four women who lived in our street who were women of a certain age, who were all miss, and for every single one of them, there was a sepia photograph on a mantelpiece of a young man lost to war. But here's what I remember about them. They were spirited. They were extremely opinionated. They were compassionate, fiercely independent. Every single one of them walked with a ramrod back, you know, straight. And there was something about the spirit of that generation that I wanted to bring to Maisie Dobbs. But together with her resolve to try to do right in the world. And in Pardonable Lies, if people have not realized it before, if the readers of Maisie Dobbs and Birds of a Feather have not realized it before, one of the things that people realize when they read this book is that Maisie is as shell-shocked a as any man. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking about age, the fact that she was underage in the story when she goes to war. One of the I do a lot of research at the Imperial War Museum in London, and I also listen to lots of personal memoirs that now exist on tape recordings. And in about, I guess it was the 1970s, the Imperial War Museum, realizing that that generation was passing on, they decided to get as much recording done as possible. And there's this one woman, and I can just imagine her talking to maybe a young female intern who's doing the recording or something, and she's just been asked what life was like for those women, you know, after the war. And I love it. I mean, obviously, I'm paraphrasing here, but she says, "Well, my dear, you know, well, my dear, very proper. Well, my dear, let me tell you. During the war, that stable door came open and we women bolted. And once that stable door was open and we bolted, there was no going back." And it's the way she said it, I thought, if I can bottle that spirit, you know, and bring it to Maisie Dobbs together with that compassion, then I'm doing right by that generation of women for whom I have an enormous regard.
We are speaking with Jacqueline Winspear. Her newest mystery novel, Maisie Dobbs novel, is Pardonable Lies. And, of course, in the United States, shell-shocked, we say post-traumatic stress disorder. And it doesn't take that much imagination to imagine how many people walking around with these feelings, you know, how to deal with them, how to try not to let the past take over where you're going. It makes me wonder what you're working on now. Because, I mean, again, as I listen to you tell about the backstory for how you did research for this, part of me says, my God, that's so reflective of the way we are now. Mm-hmm. And then another part of me says, no, it's not. I'm torn. What are you working on now? And can you tell us anything about it?
Sure. The next book is called Messenger of Truth, and it's about a wartime artist. It's a very well-known artist. He's sort of on the cusp of greater fame. And it's 1931. It's the winter of 1931. And he's found dead. And his sister is, she was actually a journalist in the war, does not believe that his death is accidental. He was on the literally about to have his big exhibit, and he's found in the gallery dead. And it's looking very much at wartime artists and what it was to be an artist in the war. And the title is taken actually from something that was said by Paul Nash, who was a famous wartime artist. And again, I off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact quote, but he said, you know, no longer am I an artist. I'm a messenger of truth from the battlefield.
Jacqueline Winspear, thank you so much for coming all the way to the United States and coming into KBOO and speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.